This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. 2 weeks ago on this program, we asked science writer Lori Garrett about an old advisory from our Breaking News Consumer's Handbook, Infectious Disease Edition, the one that read, Hollywood is pretend. Hollywood is pretend.
I was one of the three scientific advisors on the film Contagion.
Is there anyone else who might have had contact with her?
This was everyone.
Aaron Barnes did.
Barnes, he worked on another floor.
There were documents she needed to sign. He picked her up from the airport.
He picked her up from the airport?
Yes.
Where is he?
We went to great lengths to make it as accurate as we possibly could.
How are you feeling today?
Pretty cruddy, to be honest. Head is pounding. I probably picked up some sort of bug.
Where are you right now?
I'm on the bus heading to work.
I'd like you to get off immediately.
Wait, what? What's going on?
Where?
Many of the things you see in the background in Contagion are things that I've either personally seen happen or that we role-play. The empty shelves in the stores.
Is anyone even working here?
The robberies of pharmacies. People at gunpoint trying to get food. The breakdown of trucking, shipping, delivery. The you're on your own, hunker down inside your home.
I heard that and I thought, well, if this person worked on that movie, I want to go back and watch it again and see how it feels to watch it now.
And so New York Times critic Wesley Morris downloaded the film for a rewatch that was, at least initially, kind of comforting.
It's just amazing how the letters for the organizations and the players in the crisis and nightmare that we're living now are in this neat little dramatic thriller that came out in 2011.
I know, it's crazy. I mean, down to the bats.
The virus contains both bat and pig sequences. And in the bottom right, you can see the dark green is pig and the light green is bat.
One of the things I love about this movie is it's so much about competency, the belief that knowledge is the key to the solution to problems. Now, in the real world, we also know that is true, but we're at a moment where we don't know what to believe and we don't know what to do, in part because we are in the middle of incredible incompetency for no reason. This movie isn't really about the panic. It is about professional people getting their brains together to try to figure out a solution to a thing that is obviously panic-inducing.
You know, as I talk to you, it strikes me that maybe this is a kind of public health West Wing.
Mr. President, I need you to don a mask. This is a crash. Put these on, please.
Is this a drill?
No, sir. The environmental hazard monitor is detecting an unusual pattern of airborne particles.
An idealized view of how it's supposed to work.
You know, it's even smarter to think about it that way, because that way you don't have to deal with Aaron Sorkin having written it. There's no romantic speech. And yet it is this romance of efficiency and of government as the solution to national problems. And watching all these women being the faces and minds of the solution to this problem, too, is also really fascinating.
So you said that watching movie stars being world-savingly smart really does lower your blood pressure. But the title of your piece is, for me, rewatching Contagion was fun until it wasn't. When wasn't it fun?
Halfway through the movie, watching Elliot Gould lose it in that restaurant, watching the glasses being cleaned and the people coughing into their water.
Mm-hmm.
There was just something about the everydayness of a thing that a professional scientist might appreciate. And then I think I'd gotten a text from a friend of mine who was saying that another person had died. And I just thought about the way that art can crystallize your confusion and answer your questions without really being the solution to a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I felt in that moment that I was watching no longer like a very entertaining worst case scenario, but a kind of crystallization of a thing that is happening all over the world right now, which is that people are living their lives and people are dying. And I know that that's a thing that happens every day, but under these circumstances when we really ought to be thinking more about how we should be living our everyday lives because people are dying, it got heavy for me.
I was glad. I mean, we could argue whether it could have been handled better, but I was glad that at least the issue of class
mm-hmm.
and nationality was addressed.
Mm-hmm.
When the village outside of Hong Kong was really set to be extinguished because they would be at the bottom of the list, that they decided to take a desperate measure.
What's going on? What are you doing?
You stay here with us until they find a cure.
How is that going to help?
You're going to get us to the front of the line.
It becomes clear that, like, they aren't your usual Asian bad guys, right? They do sort of toe a party line in terms of their skepticism about the seriousness of the virus. But then there's a plot twist, and the plot twist to me is entirely moral, and it like winked at it, because the movie isn't about this class discrepancy, but it's not really about any one particular problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the number of ways in which a pandemic can bring out problems that already exist in societies.
Unscrupulous journalists, the fundamental problem of supply, the ever-present concern of both underreaction and military overreaction.
Yes.
It was a regular steaming bucket.
Yes.
And you set this movie against 28 Days, the zombie film, and the incredible novel Station 11. The AIDS documentary, How to Survive a Plague. I notice you don't mention the old Dustin Hoffman flick with the great chimp beginning.
Outbreak.
I'm just wondering, in the pantheon of bio-apocalyptic films that you've seen, you thought it had, what, the most gravity?
I think it's the one that most directly overlays onto the moment.
My wife makes me take off my clothes in the garage, then she leaves out a bucket of warm water and some soap, and then she douses everything in hand sanitizer after I leave. I mean, she's overreacting, right?
Not really. And stop touching your face, Dave.
It's the most ideal movie of this sort to watch at this particular moment. This isn't pandemic porn. It is something much more considered in terms of the system having to work completely, all the agencies having to work with each other, maintaining, and I think this is really important, maintaining a tone among the agencies that keeps people from freaking completely out. You know, I think the best of this style of movie is something like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the one from 78.
What is this supposed to do?
Just a mild sedative to help you sleep.
I hate you.
We don't hate you. There's no need for hate now. Or love.
There are people that will fight you, David.
They'll stop you.
In an hour, you won't want them to.
I like myself a really good allegory, but we don't have the luxury at the moment if we want to get the sense of how bad this can go, of being too existential. Because I think we're still in the phase of procedure, right? We want a procedural explanation for what ought to happen. And so this movie is entirely procedural. There's not an existential question really in it. And I truly, honestly believe that there is something about watching people do their jobs well.
Mm-hmm.
People who don't get paid a lot of money to do those jobs, who are doing their work because they believe in it, and because it's the right thing to do, and because there are lives on the line. And if you mess up, people will die. And it's your responsibility to get your stuff together to help solve these problems. We are in a moment right now where that is not happening. part of the reason people are going to keep dying is because the system isn't working the way it's supposed to. People whose job it is to keep us safe and to give us answers, they at the very least aren't giving us the answers. And the tools that are meant to keep us safe and tell us how much in danger we are don't seem to be working quite right. And you turn to a movie like this and you see not just so much how it could be, because this isn't even a moral movie. It's entirely ethical. But it becomes moral when you watch it feeling that there's a lack of competence happening on the other side of the screen.
I feel for those officials and, you know, laborers in our public health system who know better, mm-hmm. but aren't free mm-hmm. to follow their best professional instincts.
Mm-hmm. I will never forget the guest you had on a couple weeks ago, Liz Kim, works for Gothamist.
She was listening in on the phone pressers that were given by Nancy Messonnier of the CDC.
Nancy Messonnier sounded this alarm weeks ago. And when the Trump administration really gets skeptically involved and wants to sort of take over the communications aspect of all matters relating to this coronavirus, her tone had changed in the briefings.
Mm-hmm.
And she had seemed, I mean, I'm not being glib when I say this, body snatched.
Mm-hmm.
It really just kind of kills me because these are people who I don't know what it must be like to be on the ground trying to solve this problem, and your counterparts at the top are completely compromised for no good reason.
In your piece, you referred to an early scene when they're dissecting the brain damage of victim number one.
Oh, my God.
You want me to take a sample?
Yeah, I want you to move away from the table.
Should I call someone?
Call everyone.
In part of this, I don't know if you have this while you watch this, Brooke, but I really wanted to know what is going on right now in these labs. I want to know how these people are going to work every day. My sister, for instance, is an operating room nurse,
mm-hmm.
and the protocols at her hospital have changed. I don't think she feels like she's compromised and can't speak about, you know, whatever problems there are happening in her operating room, but I would love to know what it's like to be the CDC in a job not dissimilar from my sister's, right? Like a person who is responsible for serving in the context of a larger operation, but the operation is compromised for reasons that don't make medical or scientific or biological sense, but they're all political. Politics is an obstruction to solutions in this film. Not the government, politics. Well, I'll just say one other thing, which is that we should go back to 2011 for a second, because when the movie came out, it just was another thing to go see on a Friday night. And you can't go to the movies right now.
Right.
Like, movies that are supposed to open in a month are now moving to 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Movies that are supposed to open in a couple weeks are now moving to unknown release dates. I think that, you know, these communal public experiences, as we move further and further into ourselves, I think that a movie like Contagion is also useful. And I'm also curious to see if people pick up Station 11, because it's a very different piece of art, and reading it under these circumstances will just, like, I mean, get a box of tissues when you do it. But I wonder how we come out on the other side of this as people who, for a while, if we take this as seriously as I think we ought to, are going to be alone in our houses for a little while. Who do we want to be, and what do we want to be doing when we're allowed to leave again and gather in public places and just have fun? I mean, it has nothing to do with Contagion, but, you know, I'm sitting here alone in my house watching this movie that, you know, when it came out 9 years ago, I was watching in a theater full of extremely entertained people.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is a ill-advised social activity. And I wonder if it's going to make us hungry for that again.
Thank you so much, Wesley.
Oh, thank you, Brooke.
Wesley Morris is critic at large for the New York Times, as well as co-host with Jenna Wortham of the Times podcast, Still Processing.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leia Feder, John Hanrahan, Asta Chattavetti, and Zandra Ellen. We had more help from Anthony Bansi. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Josh Hahn.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. And by the way, we had more show than we could fit into the broadcast this week. So go to onthemedia.org to find those segments and sign up for our newsletter. And we'll tell you about the extras we send out each and every week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.